I assume that everybody's intense because my topic is a bit complicated topic, a topic that caused a lot of people a lot of doubts towards Israel, towards the Jewish people, towards the relationship between Christianity and the Jewish people. And my lecture is the relationship between the Christian mission and Israel as a modern Jewish nation state. Okay? And I'll focus on Israel's response in light of Christian missionary activity between 1948 and 2008. In 1948, the State of Israel was established. And as I take this opportunity to thank the Kaspari Center that gave me this opportunity to speak today, I want to thank also to people who stood and pushed this research. My professor, my supervisor, my PhD supervisor, Professor Ruth Kark, Reverend David Pilegi from the Anglican Church, the Old City, Reverend Chuck Kapp from the Cornerstone organization, and Dr. Richard Harvey. I'll start with my life story, first of all, and then you'll understand what brought me to this special and unique research topic. I was born here in Jerusalem many, many years ago to a Jewish family, that means that my mother is Jewish, by the halacha, by the Jewish tradition. Judaism passes through the mother or a person that converted to Judaism. That's my mother. But from my father's side, this story is complicated. I brought here a picture of my grandfather and my grandmother. My grandfather, Michael, he was a Jew from Poland. He was born in 1921. And my grandmother, Pelagia, she was a Russian Pravoslav, as you know, it belongs to the Greek Orthodox Church. And together they established a family at Eastern Europe, a big, big family, as you can see. My father is the youngest one, four brothers and two sisters. In 1957, my grandfather, he was a communist. He was deported from Poland due to anti-Semitism. He wanted to immigrate to Argentina because he was anti-Zionist and anti-religion and everything. But the only opportunity was the land of Israel. So the whole family arrived to the land of Israel. Back then, at the 50s, at the late 50s, mixed families, as it's called today, was a really rare phenomena. And as you can understand, the family had some problems with the Jewish society here, especially in terms of religion. My grandfather was an actor in Poland, and he was famous by his Yiddish. This is the ancient Hebrew language that the Jews spoke in Europe. And he was promoted here in Israel to work in the radio. He worked at the Israeli Broadcast Authority. He was also an actor in Yiddish, and he was a communist. And he was against any attempts of conversion of the family, including my father, to Judaism. Now, you know, the years went through, and all of the kids. Grew up and established families, and they faced tremendous problems to get married in Israel. In Israel, the Jewish marriage is through the Rabbanut, through the rabbinical institution, and some of them had severe problems to establish families. So some of them, I'm not focusing on each one, some of them went and found Christian spouses, some of them found Muslim spouses. So I have family, you know, all over, all the religions. I had also an uncle that he was a Buddhist, the one in the middle, but he passed away. And some of them faced a lot of problems of identity in the Jewish country. And we reached to my uncle. This is my uncle Gedalia. Maybe some of you know him. He's my father's older brother. He became a Messianic Jew. It happened somewhere between 1994 and 1995. I remember him mentioning the name congregation, the name Yeshua, not the name that is familiar here in Israel, Yeshu. It's a shortcut of the name Yeshua. And he started with the Messianic congregation here in Jerusalem. It's called El Roi. It's located, it used to be located at the Baptist church, here close by to the center. Today he lives at the north, at the Druze village, Osafia, and he's a senior member in a congregation that's called Or HaKarmel, the Light of Carmel, where more or less the historical location of Elijah, Elijah from the Bible. In 2008, my uncle produced a movie which he explains. It's a Hebrew movie. We try to quickly to produce you know, subtitles, but unfortunately the time was a bit tight. So I'll show you a short part of the movie about his consideration, about his problems with identities in the Israeli society, in the Jewish society. This movie is on YouTube, and obviously this is the place to show what I mean from his side of the story. Please, Marie. It's a short part of the video. I hope that one day they'll translate it. Yes. And this is the part where he's in Jerusalem. He has the doubts and he has deep thinking about his identity. Was he a Jew? Or was he? Who was he? So please, Maria. Can we turn the... Vanity of vanities. Pursuit of honor, that's what he saw. Consumption of money. Here everybody takes care of himself. I'm probably not right. Am I better than others? Is this as my world? Every day, the same thing. Where's the path that will bring me to the light? And this is the encounter that he had in 1994. It's based on a real story. I saw Gedalia, my uncle. I saw a person that seeks for truth, that seeks for God, the same way as I search for God. And I had to talk to him. You see, he sees the Bible. He's deep in the newspapers, you know, the news here in Israel, obviously. I see that you read so many newspapers, it's not good for your health. So tell me, what's the difference between what I read to the thing that you read? So the thing that I read gives me answers to my questions, but the newspapers, I'm not sure that they'll give you answers to your questions. This is how it started, okay? So it started 24 years ago. Today, all the rest of his children are Messianic Jews. Um, Now, this big change in his life obviously influenced the whole family. It influenced also me. And I tried to understand what he did, because it was really weird, really interesting. And it looked like a really good topic for research, for PhD research. And that's when I started. Now, if you saw the part, this person that his name is Moshe approaches to my uncle with the Bible, with the New and the Old Testament, obviously, this act that we see here considers in Israel as a missionary act. By others, people will see a person that spreads the gospel, a good person that tries to help, a person that has a lot of problems with identity. And today my uncle is happier than he used to be in the past. So that's when I started to get into the research and to see what was the approach of the Israeli government towards, from one hand, if you're a real ultra-Orthodox Jew, you see it as a conversion to Christianity, or something really bad and nasty. Or from the other side, it's an outreach for a person to see the truth. He was asking to see the path of light. So now we'll see how the definition, the official definition from what I gathered from different dictionaries and different encyclopedias, the meaning of the term mission is all personalities and organizations which their purpose is to distribute the gospel all over the world in various ways. So we can identify this act of my uncle and this person Moshe as a missionary act. Okay? Yes.
Is that the definition you gave it, or
this is the definition that I gave it from different dictionaries, religious dictionaries, and encyclopedias. And I'm continuing forward towards the problem. Maria, can we just adjust the a little bit? No.
No.
Minimum? That's the maximum, yes?
Yeah. It's minimum I can get.
Okay. So a previous research that started 10 years ago by Dr. Ruth Langbaum, under the supervision of my professor, she focused on the missionary activity from 882 till 1917. That's where the London Society, probably you heard about the London Society, that worked through the Anglican Church, opened the first branch in Palestine. It was during the Ottoman period. And here we see the different approaches of the Jewish community towards Christian mission activity. So we see from one hand in the left competitive approaches. You see, you know, actually struggle, violent struggle, combat, or banning, or indifferent, will ignore it. All the, you know, the different polarities, and maybe to accept help and to convert to Christianity. Now the numbers are after a really intensive missionary activity back in the Ottoman era and in those years of research, was, listen to this, between 4 to 385 Jews had converted. And again, it depends on different sources. Some sources see people, even if you accepted help, it means that you converted to Christianity. Doesn't mean that you converted totally. And some scholars consider 4. So we see a short, really low number of people that convert, of Jewish people that converted to Christianity. So the activity started here at the Old City. Some of you visited Christchurch. Christchurch, it's in the Armenian Quarter, right at the entrance to the Old City from Jaffa Gate, right in front of the Citadel. As you can see, the church lacks of any crosses or any Christian symbols. It has an altar, it as the Ten Commandments. It's a bit, the picture is a bit unclear, but this, it falls with the Hebrew verses, and it looks like a synagogue in a way, even that it's called Christ Church. It was built to attract Jewish believers to the Anglican Church. Again, it faced, I don't know if it's a failure or not, if the numbers are between 385 Jews that converted to Christianity within almost 40 years. Okay, this is the pictures inside. As you can see, they have the menorah. Okay, they have the Ten Commandments. Everything here is written in Hebrew. The altar you see also written in Hebrew. The praying books are in Hebrew. And until this day, they have, maybe Elizabeth, you know when they have this praying over there? I think on Saturday at 1 o'clock, they still have the praying in Hebrew.
Yeah.
In Hebrew, yes. They translated, obviously, the New Testament, and they have the whole ceremony in Hebrew. Another activity that the Anglican Church did here in Israel, the English Mission Hospital. It's close by here at the at the Prophet Street, on Nevi'im Street. It was one of the first modern hospitals in the Middle East, especially in Jerusalem. Today it's a school, it's an Anglican school. It's a school for foreign children, for diplomats' children. And the hospitals, especially the medical side of the influence of the missionary activity, caused a constructive approach from the Jewish community, which built new hospitals, new modern hospitals, such as Shari Tzedek, Bikur Cholim. It used to be here, Bikur Cholim, until it's closed already today, no? Mm-hmm. And Misgav Ladach. So we see, from one hand, you have struggles. From one hand, you have something positive, like helping the society, and a constructive approach that the Jews also built their own hospitals. Now, this was the target audience. Eretz Israel, Palestine Jews, the Jews of the late 19th century. Here we see a painting of Christ Church in the 19th century, at the end of the 19th century. We can see here Jews still with their traditional clothes, you see, mm-hmm. in Christ Church. Okay. Now, another main organization that we must hear here, it's the Baptist House. Today it's the Baptist Church. It belongs to the Southern Baptist Convention in the States, but it's one of the largest denominations in the States. They opened the Baptist House. It used to be a small house in 1929. Since then, the place developed. We'll touch the place. This, at the Baptist House, at the Baptist Church, that's also here at the center, that's the first Jewish Messianic congregation that my uncle used to attend. And it was located over there, El Roi. Today, El Roi is located, I think, in Merkaz Klal.
Okay.
Yes, Merkaz Klal. Okay, also close by. So, the Baptist Church. So, we see the Anglican Church and the Baptist Church active in Israel. These are already the days of the British Mandate. And now the establishment of the State of Israel. Now, you need to understand that the establishment of the State of Israel caused a big theological change. It changed a lot of approaches at the Protestant Church. The establishment of a Jewish state after many years, almost 2,000 years since the Jews lost their independence. I'm not speaking about the Catholic Church that was indifferent and was against the State of Israel until the 60s, but the Protestant Church saw this as a fulfillment of biblical prophecies. And you have a lot of biblical prophecies. You have a rich, rich literature. Some of it, I assume, also here at the library, at Kaspari Center, that priests and theologists write about the big miracle of the establishment of the state of Israel. Mm-hmm. After the Holocaust, after a severe war of independence in 1948, when Israel was surrounded by five armies of Arab countries, well equipped, and the country survived. And a second step that happened, that also was a fulfillment of the prophecies by this theology, was the mass immigration of Jews to Israel, especially from Europe, mm-hmm. the remainings of the Jews who survived the Holocaust, and Jews that came from Asia and North Africa, almost a million immigrants within 3 years. Now, from the other hand, a lot of Christian missionary activity was, as you saw, that they faced a failure with the Jewish people. They focused also in Arab, to an Arab population. And after the war of 1948, due to deportation or due to different, again, it's different approaches in history, during the war, a big population of Muslims, Palestinian Muslims and Christian Palestinians, left the country. So now the target was of those missionary activity, or those organizations became only Jews. Because to remind you, until 1967, the West Bank and Gaza and West Jerusalem wasn't a part of Israel. So the main population here, almost 90%, were Jews. Now, as soon as the government and the state was established, and the war ended, the war of 1948, all of the organizations and denominations started to return here to Israel. If it's from the Jehovah Witnesses, the Anglican Church, the Baptist Church, different churches in the United States, different organizations, Messianic Jews, all of them came here to the country. And guess what the approach was of the Jewish government? Before we'll touch the approach of the Israeli government, we'll see one key figure, actually two key figures, but one of the key figures in missionary activity was Dr. Robert Lindsay. Dr. Robert Lindsay, he was born in Oklahoma in 1917. He became Baptist during the 20s. He moved to Israel in 1939. He studied at the Hebrew University. He spoke fluent Hebrew, and he understood that the heart to a Jew is to know the language. He studied for many, many years, Biblical Hebrew, Aramaic, also the New Testament, that's something else. He was also a scholar. And in 1949, obviously during the war, he left to the States. He came back with his family, and he established strong ties, especially here. We can see a really close tie that he had with Professor David Flusser. He was a Jewish scholar. Some of them say that he was a Messianic Jew. It's a big debate. He was a scholar, famous scholar in Israel at the Hebrew University. And Dr. Lindsay and him became very good friends. And together they studied the New Testament. You have a very interesting book. It was interesting. It's called One Foot in Heaven. I don't know if you have it here, about Robert Lindsay.
I'm
not
sure. I think so.
Yeah, if not, you know, it's an Amazon. Very, really interesting, book about a person that comes from Oklahoma, a person that studies Hebrew, a person that, you know, studies the land, a pro-Zionist, a person that came here to, develop the country. How did he develop the country? He opened the Baptist village. Mm-hmm. He bought a few acres of land close to Petah Tikva. That's where I live, in Petah Tikva. And close to the springs of Hayarkon, one of the main rivers in Israel. It was established in 1953. It's still active until today. They have a Messianic Jewish community over there. They have a gospel church. They have you know, different activities, sport activities. It's really nice. I recommend you, if you'll have the opportunity, to go there. It's like really interesting place. You can see here the symbols of the Messianic Judaism, you know, the fish, the Star of David, and the menorah, the Ten Commandments. Okay, so the Baptist village, we see here a person that developed the country. In 1953, the place was abandoned. The place was swamped and everything, and he moved there. He lived also in Jerusalem and half of his time in Israel at the Baptist village, and he developed this village that's still active today. Another key person was Reverend William Hall. He had a small chapel here at Prophets 89. He wrote a book, a famous book that's called The Fall and Rise of Israel. He was very pro-Zionistic. He was Canadian, he influenced Ian Rand, that was a judge that came here in 1946 with the UN delegation, and he influenced him to vote for a Jewish country. He had tremendous efforts in fundraising and in different areas. At his end of his days in Israel, he was the pastor of Adolf Eichmann, the Nazi criminal that was here in jail, that was sentenced to death, and he was his priest. He tried to influence, and there is another interesting book, I don't feel familiar with the name, about his conversation with Adolf Eichmann just before he was hanged and finished his life here in Israel. Okay, so now we see also the Messianic Jews, the development of Messianic Jews. This is a picture from Tel Aviv, from Beit Emanuel. Again, we see the symbols, unification of the symbols, the cross and the Star of David. And as we can assume or guess, not everybody was so excited by this process of Messianic Judaism and the Christian missionary activity. We see here an example of a rabbi that was, his name was Daniel Tzion. He was the chief rabbi of the Bulgarian Jews. He immigrated to Israel in 1949. He became Messianic Jew. And as we see here from a paperclip from a newspaper, you see the rabbi of Tel Aviv decided to rabbi Daniel Tzion. The rabbis decided to take his position as a rabbi. They claimed that he was insane, and they had to force him to leave his position as a chief rabbi of a Jewish congregation in Jaffa of the Bulgarian Jews. So it was a really famous story back then. Lost control of his mental, So that was one of the approaches of the ultra-Orthodox Jews towards this change of faith that people, and he said in front of the audience, in front of the rabbis that, did the interrogation, it's not that I lost my faith, it's not that I'm a Christian, I'm a Messianic Jew, I'm a Jew that believe in Yeshua. Yeshua was Jewish, but they decided that he's mentally insane. The media here in Israel became very against the whole idea. Here we see an interview with Max Anker. He was one of the chief members of the Royal Society of Messianic Jews. And here he declares, I'm a Zionistic Jew, and I believe in Yeshua, I believe in Jesus. But the title was the Jews that picked, that chose the cross as their symbol. You see the Star of David and the symbol. And as I mentioned to Elizabeth, I have a big, big folder of paper clippings from 1953, 54, of terrifying news that, thousands of Jews are converting to Christianity. So this is one example of the media. And now we see we get approached to see the official, the governmental approach towards the missionary activity or towards Christianity. Here we see from 1954 an official visit to the Finnish school, Shalhevet Yah. There is a Finnish school here that was teaching here in Hebrew. And we'll see the figures of the students and everything. So we see here a letter from the consul, from the Israeli consul in Helsinki, that recommends that we need to take care of this visitor. And a person needs to explain to him the problem of missionary education as we can see it. And then when he'll go back to Finland, he will write it in front of the thousand of the mission in Finland and the society Carmel. Carmel was a society of Christians from Finland that came here to volunteer. Finally, at the 70s, they established the village. Probably you heard about the village Yad HaShmona. Another example we see here. Again, warning from the Ministry of Religion. Okay, he warns that the visit of this priest from Finland brings us to a severe problem. From one hand, we want to establish friendship with Finland. But from the other hand, this Finnish school is causing a big and tremendous danger to our children because they teach there in Hebrew. And this is a big problem for us. So these are official documentations that I photocopied from different archives in Israel.
So where are these stories, where they came from? Where did they...
They came from the Ministry of Religion, especially. And now we'll see what was the problem with the Ministry of Religion. Here there is a complaint from 1953. Towards Messianic Jews. The Messianic Jews are not welcomed here as a denomination in Israel. So a person that wants to convert himself to become a Messianic Jew, he converts himself to an unknown denomination here in Israel. And then, obviously in Israel you can convert to a different religion, but here they say that if you're a Messianic Jew, it's a problem to convert to something that doesn't exist. They cannot, you know, accept it. And obviously, they forbid a situation of establishing families with Messianic Jews and everything, because it's a term that doesn't exist here. So if a person wants to become an Anglican or a Muslim, he can do it. But to become a Messianic Jew, it's a big problem for the Israeli society. You see here, he says, towards marriage, we only accept marriages if it's in the official Protestant denominations and not to Messianic Jews. Again, it's from 1952. So these approaches are from the Ministry of Religion, from the special branch that was in charge of the Christian communities. And obviously, this tremendous problems caused severe relationship to Israel. Neil Mikulski, you see, historian, philosopher of education, Catholic educator, religious educator. He visited Israel in 1954, and he warns the officials of the Ministry of Religion in Israel. He says the public opinion in the United States, and he's Catholic, and he mentions especially the Protestant denominations, they are following the situation, the status of those Jewish Christians who keep faith to the nation, to the Jewish nation, and to the country. And he says, Neil Mikulski, we are accepting from you to look, to have a more liberal approach. The same as Jews are asking that this liberal approach will be also applied for them, okay, in the United States. So here we see claims, there were dozens of claims by priests, by consuls, by high officials in different governments. Here we see, for instance, a few documents. It's a pity that we cannot minimize it more. We can see here a problem, a letter that comes from the ministry, the foreign ministry in Israel, that accepts a message from New York that the Jews in New York saw in different newspapers about 1,000 Jews that converted to Christianity. So what they did, the Ministry of Religious invited Reverend William Hall, the Reverend that I showed you that wrote the book, The Rise and Fall of Israel, and pro-Zionist, and says, this is a misinformation. The converted Jews in Israel, I can mention it with two digits, and not 1,000 or something. So the Ministry of Religion decided to check how many Jewish children are educated in those Christian schools in Israel. And as we can see, a long list. Another point that I need to stand and mention here is a point that there was a big confusion in Israel between missionary activity towards schools, Christian schools, Catholic schools, that parents were sending their children to study, for instance, French languages, or to be more educated than regular schools, and they were counted in the numbers as Jewish students in Christian schools, in missionary schools. Here we see a figure up here, Yafo, the Tabitha School, belongs to the Scottish Church. We see here 258 students and one Jewish teacher, okay? Here we see in Jerusalem, we see the Finnish, the Shalhevet Yah School. We have here 23 and four Jewish teachers. So we see here different numbers that somehow somebody gathered them together and now decided that we have a big, big problem. So now, what can we do with this problem, with this missionary problem? So what did they did? They sent special people to follow those Jewish families that sent the kids to school. If there were governmental workers, the parents, you can see here, head of the manpower at the Israeli police, they estimates. You see, it's secret document. They gave him numbers of two names of two police officers that their kids are learning in a Christian school. And they were warned that if they won't take their kids out of the school, they will lose their job. You see?
That was in 56?
This was in 54, 1954. Okay. Here another method that the Ministry of Religion did here in the 50s. They put a sticker. Pay attention. The owner of this shop is sending his kids to a missionary school and refuses to transfer the kids to a Hebrew school, to a Jewish school. And try to, a person comes to open a store, a grocery store, and this poster is, an older people, an older. So we see here intimidation of people. Now, we see that this poster is not, you don't see anywhere here, the Ministry of Religion and everything. Obviously, it was undercover. And didn't leave any traces that can be blamed that you can blame anybody from the Ministry of Religion. Here you see again different informations. You know, I erased it because it's people that probably today they are in the 70s or something. I didn't want, you know, their names to be up here. This guy sent his son to this school and the other school, and you know, or this way. You see, they mention here, this is an NGO that's called Keren Yaldeinu, our children's fund. We'll see about this organization soon. We can see here that it writes to the Ministry of Defense that in Yafo, in the French hospital, there is a converted Jew to Christianity from Austria, and they say that he was sent by the Vatican, and he's dealing here with spying, with military espionage. You see? Again, you see different blames, that people are spies, that people are negative elements here in Israel. And now we face the Ministry of Religious Affairs, okay? Now we need to understand that the Ministry of Religious Affairs, it had few departments. Now the department that dealt with all the official visits and all the administration and registration of marriage and conversion was this office, the sub-office, the Department of Christian Communities. But from one end, showed appreciation to Christian Zionism, to donations, to support to Israel, to development, as we can see here at this lecture, for instance, the establishment of the Baptist Village. And from the other hand, they opened the Department of Special Operations, a secret operation, that he, this person, Rabbi Eli Torin, was in charge of this office. He was a worker of the Ministry of Religious Affairs, and he established an idea to confront the missionary problem in different ways, because if you try to intimidate or to do harmful things, it affects Israel's foreign image and everything. So he decided, as you can see, the Yaldeinu Fund, he decided to change the approach together with Mrs. Malka Frankel. She was an educator from Holland, a Jew from Holland. And Rabbi Torin, you see, joined forces with Mrs. Frankel, to 40 Keren Yaldeinu youth clubs. They opened youth clubs that were newly established. Rabbi Torin, outreach skills were, as we can see, really fruitful in terms of donations. This fund is still active until today in Israel, in 6 cities. Back then they had 40 branches. So they decided to give non-official education to the Jewish kids from the age of 6 till 18. And try to occupy them in the after-school hours, again, to teach them foreign languages. So the problem of Jewish students in Christian schools will be annihilated totally. So this was the Keren Yaldeinu Fund. Now, how do you fund the fund? With fundraising. You see here, this is from the Jerusalem Post, 1953. You see 250 Keren Yaldeinu children celebrate. So here we see a big progress from the harmful activity to more soft activity to educational activity. Okay, so here we see our children's fund. It's still active from 1953. So this was the government. Now the local ultra-Orthodox rabbis, how did they approach to this problem? Here we see a big rally the opposition to Christian mission. We see here the Rabbi Cook. He was a famous rabbi of the modern Orthodox Jews. And they had big demonstration. It happened in 1963. And this demonstration ran through a violent reaction. The demonstration, we see here different, from the demonstration, you see our path is, you know, until there. We are, we are burned by the Christianity. We ask for the Christian missionaries to leave our country, return our kids. The mission is sabotaging the nation, hunters of souls. Okay? And here we see the demonstrations. Here we see a group of activists that were arrested after attacking a monastery, St. Joseph Monastery. It's up here in Prophet Street. It's a Franciscan monastery. And here we can see the activists after the demonstration at the prison here, at the Israeli police. The headquarters up here. We can see the police officer also with them, so we can see maybe mixed feelings from the law authorities. So this happened in 1963, and what leaded the violent approach was this new organization, Yad Lachim. It was called in the beginning the activist members of the Torah, the Bible section. The organization was founded in 1950 with the aim of resisting the authorities to impose secular education for children of immigrants from Muslim countries. In 1959, the organization began to operate against missionary activity. So we can see, as soon as the other organization, the Keren Yaldeinu, reduced the violent approach and switch to a softer, other forces are taking their place. And since 1959, this organization is the big threat on Messianic Jews, on Christian missionary activists in Israel. It's located in few cities in Israel. It's located one office in Jerusalem, the main office in Bnei Brak. So here we saw the demonstration. The Yad Lachim, as part of the counter-missionary activity, published pamphlets. In the pamphlets, they published names and addresses of missionary activity, activists in Israel, of Messianic Jews. Some of them faced violence, not from the members of this organization, but the people that read their, that saw their address. Maybe it's my neighbor. He's a soul hunter. Yes.
How did they get their information? Did they have multiple ways, or did they go, for example, to the employment office and see?
No. They have people that can come to each, lecture, gathering, praying.
Well, for example, going back to the schools and the four Jewish teachers.
Ah, the schools? Yes. That's what's from the Ministry of Education. Yes. But today, they can locate through different undercover people that can attend meetings or prayings. But back then, it was from the Ministry of Education because it was official schools. Mm-hmm. Okay. Here we see stickers. The mission is catastrophe for the Israel nation, you see. And the violence that was faced, you see this, this is one of the people that helped me in my research, Reverend Chakup, from the Cornerstone organization. He had a bookstore up here in Prophet Street 89. You see the books that he was selling there or distributing. And his store, as you see, they broke the windows. He was attacked a few times, violently attacked. The same thing happened also to different Christian institutes that wasn't involved at all with missionary activity. One of those places were the Swedish Theological Institute up here also at the Prophet Street, and other let's say neutral organization that came here to Israel to help. And the most severe attack was the arson on the Baptist church in October 1982. The church was burnt, totally burnt. That's Liz Kapp, by the way, Chuck Kapp's wife. Only the piano stayed, remained from the fire. This is the only window after they rebuilt the church. That was the only, the window that was remained in the arson. With a big surprise, the mayor of Jerusalem back then, Teddy Kollek, raised half of the money to establish the church again. And today the church is, as I showed in the beginning, the Baptist house, the Baptist church, is a really nice and big place, bigger than it used to. So we see that sometimes it can cause positive changes. You know, the neighbors helped them, and so the church was rebuilt after a few months, I think. Okay. Again, we see that counter-missionary activity was also against the construction of the village at the Galil Nesamim. It's a village that was built by Germans and Dutch and foreign citizens that wanted to establish a village. And until this issue was at the Israeli parliament and rabbis and a big, big mess happened with Nesamim. It happened in 1963. Until one of the rabbis was convinced that the people of the village Nesamim are not involved with missionary activity. And the same rabbi used to come there every week to teach them a lesson about the Jewish section of the Old Testament. This is what the ironic part, mm-hmm. after he was convinced that they are harmful. Another place that was against the news, the Brigham Youth University, the Mormon University, Mount Scopus. Again, the ultra-Orthodox parties here. It raised the big demonstrations against the construction of the university. The Mormons had to sign a special contract that they declared that they won't do any missionary activity in Israel, and then the permit was and this nice building is built until today, that drags students and tourists again. You can see here a fear from everything that sounds Christian or can cause conversion or a threat to the Jewish people. And in conclusion, so as we saw an ambivalent reaction of the state authorities towards missionary activity, from one hand we saw at the Ministry of Religious Affairs those different departments, the arguments that they had between different officials over there to do underground counteractivity, to shame people, maybe to cause violence, or from the other hand, a soft approach, a constructive approach. We'll build our own educational centers. I also saw in the documents, in the research, government officials, you see, collective ties with Christian countries, churches, and mission organizations. Today, the main support of Israel is in the United States, the evangelistic Christianity in the United States. The support is also comes in terms of monies and in terms of politics. So we see here this ambivalent approach. And from the other hand, other government officials are struggling against mission organization activities and demand to deport them from Israel. Now, you need to understand that the official approach that had few approaches, and the approach of the public that was, as we saw, violent. And until 1977, the situation in Israel was, more or less comfortable for missionary activity, even with all the threats and all the things that we saw. But in 1977, that's a thing that you must know, that it's a law that still exists today. In 1977, the Likud party took over. The Likud party had a coalition with ultra-Orthodox parties at the Israeli Knesset, the parliament. And the religious party of Agudat Israel pushed the government to force a law. It's called the Mission Law. Okay? So the Mission Law says that you are forbidden of giving any material benefits, because until 1977, there was a big claim that people, Jewish people, are converting to Christianity due to material benefits. If it's leaving the country, if it's work, if it's money, if it's food, if it's medical assistance. So the law says you shouldn't give any material benefits. And again, if you're giving material, it's illegal here. And the other part of the law says that it's forbidden to convince a minor under the age of 18 with the Christian faith. And that's the reason, by the way, that until I was 20, nobody in my family, my uncle and nobody asked me to come or to read something or to see something. Or when I was 20, I remember that I came to the Messianic congregation, but nobody told me that there is a law or something. But I noticed it also in my story, in my life story, that people try to obey the law or else it's illegal. So this is the situation now. Another approach towards Messianic Jews: there is a law of return from 1950. There is a law of return that a person that can prove by documentation that one of his grandparents was Jewish has the right to immigrate to Israel. It's called Aliyah, and to receive full Israeli citizenship, even if it was, for instance, in my family, that my grandmother was a Russian Pravoslav. Her connection to something Jewish, to a Jewish husband, even that he wasn't feeling himself as a Jew. There is a term for Jews that were communist, the non-Jewish Jews. Okay, so she obviously received from day one citizenship, full citizenship. But a person that is a Messianic Jew, and that's something very important here, that governmental officials receive any information about their connections with Messianic Judaism, they lose their right to immigrate to Israel, even though they are Jewish, but from, you know, the Jewish law, by the Jewish law, if they have a Jewish mother. They went to the Supreme Court, and the Israeli Supreme Court decided that a person that a Jew that becomes Messianic Jew, he loses his privilege to receive Israeli citizenship. Even that by the ultra-Orthodox law, by the halakha, a Jew that even if he converts to fully to Christianity to become Pravoslav or Catholic, he doesn't lose his Jewish identity. But if he starts to believe in Yeshua, in Jesus, or anybody else, this person loses his right to become a citizen in Israel, and this is a big problem. I met few people personally that struggled the government, and people that came here and wanted to give their donation in terms of military service, in terms of develop the country, and the secular law forbids them from accepting, even that the religious law says that it doesn't catches, you know, the conversion. A Jew remains a Jew until he dies, but the secular approach, the secular court decided that the law of return, the rights, the full rights that every Jew or somebody that has a link to Judaism can receive here as soon as he lands at the airport. As soon as he lands at the airport, he receives his citizenship. Now another as you saw, I limited my research to 2008. Right now the Kaspari Center is having this research about Messianic communities until our days. First of all, to have an historical perspective, so it stops 10 years ago. And 10 years ago, something really horrifying happened here in Israel. A Messianic Jewish family at the town of Ariel, it's a settlement in the middle of Samaria, their son, the Ortiz family, I forgot the son's name, he received a package. Daniel. He received a package. It was exactly 10 years ago. He received a package for Purim. Purim is the holiday that will be celebrated Thursday all over the country and Friday in Jerusalem. So he received a box with a gift, and in the box was a bomb. Now, this was the most severe attack on any Messianic Jew or Christian activist in Israel. The person that sent him the bomb, he was an ultra-Orthodox settler that... It's not that he had, this hatred only to Messianic Jews, only to Christianity. The same person, the same Jewish terrorist. It's funny to say, but he's a Jewish terrorist. He's in prison now. He sent also bombs to left-wing professors. He killed a Palestinian. So in the eyes of some right-wing activists in Israel, Messianic Jews are the same target as Palestinians, as a left-wing professor, and as other targets that are, as they say, threatening the Jewish people. So from 2008, the situation is peaceful, but here and there probably we hear some harassments and some problems. So this is it. I conclude my lecture in this pessimist end, but I hope that we'll see some optimist approach and change of atmosphere in Israel. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to.
Please, you can. Yeah. You have some time for questions, so.
What would be necessary to see some optimism?
What is necessary?
In your opinion.
In my opinion, I think that the Jewish people becomes more and more religious and more less tolerant for minorities, not just the ones that I mentioned. So I, but you know, in history, people change, you know, so this is, this can be an optimistic change. But now, from what I see in the streets, from what I see in, you know, at the media and everything, we see that Israel becomes less liberal and more, as probably you heard about this whole issue with refugees from Africa. And so the majority here in Israel is to deport those people back to Africa. And the minority, the liberal side, is a minority, you know, it's not, it's, it doesn't, you know, it's a big problem, but things can change. Some of the modern Orthodox rabbis claim that also the money that the evangelist Christianity in the United States is filthy money and Israel shouldn't accept it and everything. But somehow if it's terms of monies and support, so somehow people have a blind eye to it. So in a way, there is a freedom of religion, but we face a lot of problems here. We'll have to be patient to wait for the next book from Kaspari, the next research, to see what are the results of the public opinion within the Messianic Jewish communities. The big change happened, again, as I told you, things can change extremely. In the 90s, the big immigration from former Soviet Union changed the whole picture. A million immigrants came here. Some of them had some problems with any identity because they were born and raised in the Soviet Union. Some of them came with mixed families. Some of them came with really shortage of information, vital information about Judaism, about the Bible. And today we see a tremendous growth of Messianic Jewish communities. The congregations are, I think, from what I understand, 70% of them are...
Maybe 60.
Because in 2008 it was 70% of the population was immigrants from the previous Soviet Union. So again, those people are, you know, they have families, and it changes, you know, the environment in Israel. Somehow the Israeli society accepted them with their own you know, problems. But the fact that they are productive people, the fact that they are serving in the army, some of them have high positions in the army, Messianic Jews, changes the approach towards, and when you face to face to people, when you meet people, obviously the situation is different. When, you know, a lot of people here in Israel has a problem with English and everything. So when, you know, people that moved here and worked here, as I mentioned, Dr. Robert Lindsay spoke fluent Hebrew, it changed the interaction between people. Because something foreign looks like something intimidating, something unknown. So this is, but I hope that, you know, Kaspari Center was built in
82.
So back in the 50s, and such a place like this would have been, I don't know, burnt or I don't know what, pushed. And you feel here some harassment or?
Not here, but I had problems in the 1980s when I started up at French Hill. I needed to move out. It was in an apartment and that was not equipped.
You mentioned the Mormons having signed an agreement not to spread their message, but they're not really
tradition. They're not evangelical Bible believing.
Oh, exactly, exactly.
So
I also mentioned the Jehovah Witnesses.
Yeah.
Because of this lack of information, vital information in the Israeli society, that they gathered all together, the Catholics and
sure.
the Protestants, and all together, and produced this number, 1,000, and you know, published it in the newspapers and everything.
But my question is,
are there traditional
Protestant evangelical organizations that have signed a similar agreement in order
no.
to get benefits? And
No. Nobody asked them for it.
Okay.
Why? Because all of them, I don't know if people are aware, I was surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all of the denominations worked here at the British Mandate,
mm-hmm.
including Jehovah
so
Witnesses.
What's called grandfathered in.
So if they were here already,
right.
so what can we do? But with newcomers, with they had some Mormons here at the 19th century, but they didn't have something established here.
Mm-hmm.
But all the rest of them, you know, they just came back to their... During the war, you know, all the offices and churches were closed.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came again, you know, like they had certificates that they worked here. And
okay.
yes, and they opened, you know, they cleaned the place and
work
again.
Their presence was established.
Established. So it wasn't, yes. Yeah.
So.
And on the Declaration of Independence, Israel is obligated for freedom of religion.
Yeah.
So for newcomers, it's a problem.
Yeah.
But for the rest of them, no.
Okay.
It was illegal to ask anybody else to sign on
uh-huh.
on documents because it's a violation of the freedom of religion.
Okay.
With the Mormons, it's something different, you know. It's,
I see.
Yes. Okay. Any more questions?
More questions?
Okay. So thank you very much. Thank you.
I have one last one. Just curious to know. Yeah, it was nice to see your uncle, and you
yes.
said that he was now living in Sofia.
In Sofia or Carmen?
Druze
is a village.
It's
a Druze village.
That's why I'm asking.
Yes,
so
it's a Druze village. It's a
Druze
in the Druze village. So again, we see here something unique that developed. It's the location. It's a biblical location. By the way, if you visit over there, you can go there to Gedalia.
Yeah.
He's my uncle. He owns a small coffee place over there. He will accept you. And I'm not sure about his English, but you'll understand him a little bit because you saw the movie. Yes. So you see different congregations that are gather people from all over, and the Druze people. It's a section of they're not Muslim. They're a special section at the Islam, you can say, and they're very liberal and tolerant toward
messianics,
and that's the reason that. They establish a big center over there, a big center that attracts and he lives there at the village. Yes.
Interesting.